Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Yemen in the spotlight. Washington says it wants to de-escalate regional tensions, but instead expands the conflict. This administration is simply out of control. Also, what are we to make of South Africa's legal brief charging Israel with genocide in Gaza? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my usual guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And in Marrakesh, we have Martin Jay. He's an award-winning journalist. All right, let's start out with Georgia in Budapest. George, you and I have been watching very closely Secretary of State Blinken's recent trips, shuttle diplomacy he's like to trying to do in the Middle East, trying to de-escalate. But why is the United States and the UK attacking Yemen if they're looking for de-escalation? Please explain to me in simple words, because I'm a simple person. Go ahead, George.
Well, I wish I could explain, but as you say, it is the buzzword of the Biden administration and, of course, of NATO in general, that you say you're doing one thing and you're doing exactly the opposite. So, he goes in there and says, well, I'm trying to de-escalate. And that's what Admiral Kirby, the White House spokesman, said. Yes, yes, everything we're doing in Yemen is in order to de-escalate. When what we've seen is what was obvious really from the beginning, once the Biden administration completely wedded itself to Israel in what it's doing in Gaza, that it is escalating the conflict. It was obvious that this was going to happen. And it has now launched these attacks really without any kind of justification in international law. I mean, there's no UN Security Council resolution. No state has come along and said, hey, can you organize a posse for us and go in and do some bombing for us? So that none of that has happened. And so they're just launching attacks without the slightest prospect of achieving success. Hence, their only justification is, well, it was very discriminate, it was very proportionate and very targeted, and there's nothing to worry about.
Well, Martin, it's very interesting, is it, how Yemen comes back on the scene. But for those of us been watching, this has been front and center in regional politics for a very long time. And if you think you can scare the Houthis with bombing, I mean, you have to be laughed out of the room. I mean, they have been bombed with American bombs using surrogates for many, many years. And fortunately, unfortunately, depending how you want to look at it, the very tenuous 2002 truce that the Houthis had with Saudi Arabia, even the Saudis are worried about that because they got whipped there as well. So the United States is stoking something where it could go into a direction of, like I always say, the law of unintended consequences.
Yeah, I mean, we've been, for a number of years now, we've been watching the Saudi regime bomb the Houthis in what is sort of more or less the western bit of Yemen, and chastising them and pretending that we're not really very happy about how they bomb indiscriminately and hit people at wedding parties and those horrific images we saw for years and years and years. They got a peace deal about a year ago. So this puts Saudi Arabia in a really awkward position now, because Saudi's aligned to the West. But I think there's a huge amount of miscalculation which has happened in the last few days. And I've been warning, I've been saying this on your show for the last few weeks now. The miscalculation with the Houthis is that, and I hear this word a lot in press coverage, this is a warning. So we're giving the Houthis a warning, you know. And the Houthis are just looking at this thinking, you've got to be kidding. You know, it's just like we're probably the poorest country on the planet. We've been literally, you know, reduced to rubble. We've got nothing left. And the worst people in the world you can fight are people who've got nothing to lose. And that's really the lesson that's not been heeded by the West. So, you know, Sunak in the UK, bless him, this dwarf poodle of Biden has been making these statements. You know, he was in Ukraine just a few days ago, been talking about, you know, we need to send a message to the Houthis. Well, the message is, we're ready for it. Are you up for it? You know, because this is going to backfire.
Well, and George, let's talk about what the Houthis' message is to the United States and its pretend coalition, is that the Houthis are doing what they're doing in the Red Sea in solidarity with the genocidal war being waged in Gaza. So if they stop, if there's a ceasefire, then the Houthis will react accordingly. But that's never part of the story, is it?
That's exactly right. And that shapes the media coverage, where all of the focus is on what these Houthis, they're tampering with international commerce. The freedom of navigation is in danger. Everyone just forgets about, how many times has the United States bordered Iranian ships to seize cargo over the years? This is a regular thing. This is a violation of our sanctions. Well, who cares? I mean, these are sanctions that have no basis in international law. Israel has on a regular basis bombed Iranian tankers. This is never covered. Apparently that isn't a threat to freedom of navigation.
Well, George, I talk to you so often, I can actually preempt your thoughts here. So I did a little bit of homework in advance here. I'm glad George brought up freedom of trade. Well, let's take a look here. I did the research. For the past 9 years, Washington and Riyadh have maintained a blockade of Yemen, impeding trade. The U.S. substantially restricts trade with North Korea, Cuba, Venezuela, Russia, China, Syria, Afghanistan, Iran. What about impeding trade with them? Finish up, George.
Yeah, no, that's right. Then, of course, you have UK, which still holds on to Venezuela's gold. And, the UK, which, remember again, seized an Iranian tanker, kept it in Gibraltar because it was violating sanctions in providing oil for Syria. Actually, they got it wrong. Iran, there was no sanction against Syria getting oil. But, so they didn't even understand that. So the whole idea that the world trade is in danger and therefore we have to bomb is absolutely nonsensical. And you're absolutely right in what you said. There's a simple solution. I mean, if you start with a ceasefire, then one has to assume that the Houthis' campaign against the shipping headed for Israel or out of Israel will stop. But that's the solution that's off the table right away.
Well, Martin, we started out with talking about to de-escalate, you have to escalate. I need to get my head around that one, but maybe it'll come to me eventually. But this is sending an indication that the United States is willing, with its junior partner, as usual, the kind of the Ed McMahon of foreign policy on the world stage. I hope our viewers get the reference. But this is just pursuing Israel's foreign policy objectives. I don't see what the strategic interests of the UK and the United States are at all.
It's a short-term solution because the big thinkers are, the way they are thinking is that we need a distraction away from the genocide because it's getting way too much press coverage. And what better way to do it than to have some strategic strikes? I hate that phrase. It's going to come up again. Strategic strikes against this ragtag, kind of.
Well, apparently they haven't been very strategic and they haven't been pretty precise. That's according to the New York Times this morning.
Keep going. They haven't killed anybody, and that's the point.
Houthis haven't killed anyone in this.
No, I think the strikes haven't killed anybody, according to Biden. He says they haven't. We'll see in a few days. It might have killed a few people, but he's thinking, and when you have this abysmal disrespect for international law going on in Gaza, it's only natural that the powers of the world will take advantage of that to have other examples of disrespect of international law. And that's what we're seeing now. We're seeing a kind of we're peeling the onion. Every time you pull a layer off, you see something else which is, you can compare to it. But I think this is the thinking from UK and America is this is small scale. This is very strategic. This could be something manageable. And the mistake that they're making, the huge mistake, and I mentioned this in your last show, is the key word here is relationships. Blinken and Biden are panicking. Blinken's going backwards and forwards to Tel Aviv. He might as well rent an apartment there. I mean, why doesn't he just live there? Wouldn't it be easier, for everyone? But Blinken, apparently, Biden.
We'll talk about this in the second part of the program, but he might share a jail cell with somebody.
He might, yeah. But yeah. Biden made some telephone calls recently to Netanyahu, apparently, according to the Washington Post, pleading with him to not make this war escalate further between Israel and Hezbollah. So this is what we're all trying to avoid. And the idea that we can have a sort of a bite-sized conflict in the Red Sea with the Houthis, because they're not so powerful. They're one of the poorest countries in the world, you know, and they're not a proxy of Iran. We should make this distinction. They are allies of Iran, but they're not a full proxy. And this is where the mistake lies. The Iranians will not take this lying down. There will be a response. My money would go on a measured response. In other words, the Iranians are very cool-headed people, very smart people. They might not respond this week. It might take several months. They may well decide, let's let the Americans do this a bit more so that when we come back and we do finally hit American soldiers in Iraq, for example, with our militias there, perhaps there'll be some sympathy in the West and some understanding of the West, you know, that this is a response. I wouldn't be at all surprised if they did that from April and May onwards, just when Biden's re-election campaign kicks off. You know, so that might be one of the responses. The other thing that Iranians might be thinking about is a strategic strike themselves. Now, Nasrallah in Lebanon, for many times now, in the last few speeches that I've watched him deliver in Beirut, has mentioned that the new generation rockets that he has now, it's not only that he has 100,000 of them, but the precision of these rockets is pretty scary. And he's often mentioned power stations and military installations that he could hit. In other words, we can do strategic strikes as well, where we don't kill very many Israelis, but we put power out for thousands of people, or we, you know, create a nuclear incident and which generates a massive amount of media attention around the world and creates debate on the UN level. And I think strategic strikes might be something that we should watch out for on the Iranian side.
Well, but you know, that we're rapidly running out of time. You know, George, it's interesting in this conversation, Iran keeps getting mentioned here. And I think that's really what it's all about here. I mean, you know, Hezbollah, you know, sponsored by Iran, the Houthi sponsor, you know, again, as Martin puts it out, I mean, they have moral support, all kinds of support, maybe diplomatic support, but I mean, this kind of support that Iran can afford Hezbollah and the Houthis is not comparable with what the United States does with Israel. But it's a way, I mean, again, you know, for Western publics, Houthis, well, you know, hoodies, what are you talking about? Iran, oh, Iran. That's the button they want to push, George.
Yes, exactly. And there, without question, there are many, many people in Washington who are itching to have a war with Iran. I mean, so they, you know, haven't quite got that war with Russia off the ground. You know, they were busy with that for the past couple of years. Well, maybe we can get one off the ground with Iran. You know, we have obviously Nikki Haley isn't far from saying that. Lindsey Graham isn't far from saying that. The assumption underlying all of this is, of course, that, well, Iran or Hezbollah, they'll be the grown-ups in the room. So we can do what we like, but we can rely on, you know, Russia, China, Hezbollah, Iran. You know, they'll be act in a restrained way. Well, they may or they may not.
All righty, hold that thought, George. We have to go to a quick break. And after that quick break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. Okay, let's go back to Martin in Marrakesh. Obviously, one of the biggest news out there right now is the genocide case against Israel sponsored by South Africa. And it's actually quite fascinating. And it's, for me, it's almost kind of a turning point, a paradigm shift. The merits of the South African case for a non-lawyer, and I think it was written very well for non-lawyers to understand. That was part of it, okay? Very, very comprehensive, very calm and sober in its presentation, in written form and then oral arguments. The Israeli response was, well, they're just surrogates of Hamas. They're allies of Hamas. I mean, they had the South Africans presented a brief that is legal, incomprehensible. But the Israelis made their brief political. Okay. Mm-hmm. If you disagree with this, you're a terrorist, you work with Hamas and all of that. It's a very bad look, and it's not an argument, Martin.
And the Israelis lent very heavily on this idea of self-defense. But it doesn't work in international law when you're occupying a part of your own country. In this case, Gaza. So I don't think that argument's going to hold up. I think this is going to be a test case for the court itself. I think this will be a make or break. You know, a lot of skeptical journalists like myself kind of look at it and think, is this going to be a PR exercise? Is it going to be a way of the West ticking a box and saying, well, you know, we took the Israelis to the court, you know, but they got off on a fine detail, or we do punish them, but how do we go about punishing them? You know, how does that happen? I've got a really bad feeling deep down that it is going to get fudged somehow along the way. You know, that we're not going to get, you know, the lucid and uncompromising outcome that we hope for, which is to make a precedent against Israel and say, look, you're breaking international law. This is a genocide. It's got to stop. And all those people involved, like Netanyahu and all those generals, have got to be pulled into the court, you know, like Nuremberg trials. That's where we should be going with this now. But, you know, it's hard to say whether this will lead in any one particular direction.
I'm not really sure. In a sense, George, I'm not really convinced it really matters. Okay, is because a case has already been made. It is brought into a proper recognized venue. It is from a nation state in good standing. Okay, a nation state in South Africa that knows something about apartheid and colonial rule. They've scored a lot of points in their corner, and I do not deny there's public relations all over the place. It's not deny that, but George, the court itself is very politicized. These are representatives of nation states, and they're going to vote accordingly to politics. So I'm not sure it really matters at the end of the day. The fact that Israel is in the dock is enough for the world to turn around and say, these laws about the Genocide Convention were made because of the suffering of European Jews in the 1940s, and now here you are. That is a very powerful message, George.
No, I agree that it is powerful, and particularly because it's Israel that's in the dock. The Genocide Convention was, after all, created precisely in response to what happened to the Jews in World War II. And so if they're in the dock, I mean, that's a real come down from the days of 1948 when the United Nations voted on it. However, the problem is that this notion of genocide has now been so polluted. You know, so many states have now banded this around and have gone to the International Court of Justice with that accusation that it's lost its resonance. So, you know, we had Bosnia and Herzegovina. They brought this genocide case against Serbia. that dragged on for years. In the end, the court didn't say Serbia was guilty of genocide in Bosnia and Herzegovina. Then, of course, we had Croatia that brought a genocide case against Serbia. Serbia, in turn, then brought a genocide case against Croatia. Both were dismissed eventually by the court. Now we've got Gambia that's brought a genocide case against Myanmar. That's pending. Of course, Ukraine has this genocide case against Russia. And there are going to be more. You know, there's going to be a genocide case against China.
But the fact that Israel is in the dock, I think, is very, very significant. And plus, in the first part of the program, we talked about the Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken. Well, you know, he's in panic mode. And it's obvious when he speaks in public because he is culpable. He is a co-conspirator in all of this. All of the ones you mentioned, George, are very important. They're germane and they're testing international law. But now we have very recognizable, powerful players being held to account. And I think that is significant. What do you think, Martin?
Yeah, I think Blinken is panicking. You can see it now. I mean, there is this palpable sense of nervousness in how he speaks, because he's starting to join up all the dots and he's starting to think this could go very, very badly for the Biden administration in the short and longer term. You know, it's I think perhaps your point of view about it being enough that the case is there, I think that may well be actually the basis for it to be fudged finally, is that a lot of people will shrug their shoulders and say, look, we got to the court. That's not.
But the corollary of that, Martin, is that the court it doesn't at the end of the day, it doesn't seek justice. It's still a political organ. So I think that the global public opinion will be satisfied that the process, at least the process, was started and they went through it. But the outcome, it will be a political gambit. So that's why I say it's kind of good enough, but I won't be happy with the outcome if it's politically determined. It's NATO countries versus the rest of the world. Then it's a joke.
Yeah, and it may well be, you know, a very, very good threshold for all sorts
exactly.
of
dictators. That's exactly where I want to go. Yep, go
around
ahead.
The world, you know, and not only around the world, but Israeli leaders. The next generation of Israeli leaders may well realize that, well, we've created a precedent now, you know, whereby Israel, the very country where this court was created to protect originally from the 1940s and the Holocaust, now Israel can be in the dock and can be, and individuals can be held accountable. So it may well spark a new level of accountability, a new level of governance. But in the short time, we've got a World War III breaking out here. We've been talking about this for weeks now, and now it's happening. You know, and I wonder what we'll be talking about in 7 days' time next week, because, you know, the way things are looking now, we're hitting the Houthis, and Iran now is looking at the map of the region and seeing and hearing how nervous America is. America has gone public. Biden's gone very, very open. I think it's probably a foolish mistake to make, militarily speaking, but he's actually declared where all his weaknesses are. He doesn't at any cost want a war with Hezbollah. That may well be a factor that the Iranians will be looking at now, to how to exploit that. How do we crank this up one notch so that we are now the ones who are escalating to de-escalate? I think this, the boot is going to be put on the other foot, and it could happen very, very quickly.
Well, we could very well be talking about this next week and the weeks afterwards. But George, one more point, and it's already been slightly mentioned here, and I think it's really important, is that, you know, a lot of these ideas about international law and even kind of the political legal jargon that we have about human rights and international humanitarian law stem from the West because of the world wars of the last century. Talking about the ideas of genocide, the word genocide is actually a relatively new word. But what I think is really interesting, George, is that you have the global South embracing these ideas and putting the West in the dock. And I think that in South Africa, that's why it's so important that a country like South Africa is doing this, because it is a country that is that was colonized. And we have the word of apartheid because of South Africa. It's very interesting, this paradigm shift where Western ideas and the hope of Western design institutions could actually work for the rest of the world, even though the West itself won't honor the spirit and letter of those institutions and ideas.
Well, that's an interesting way to look at it. However, the Western powers control most of the institutions. The International Criminal Court, which, you know, most of the world signed on to, except the great powers and the leading Western power, the United States. Well, who has been targeted by the ICC? Countries of the global South. Nearly all states that Africa.
It's Africans, Middle Easterners, and always their favorite hatred, the Serbs.
Exactly, and then and now they've gone after Russia, but you know, there's not a great deal that they can do about that. And this is the point that the West has promulgated all of these doctrines. However, the idea was that, well, they're not going to be applied against us. We're going to apply them against others, and we're going to show the world how virtuous we are and how we adhere to international law. But you know, you can't do it to us. And so, you know, we had Blinken and Biden. You know, they were riding high when the ICC issued the arrest warrant against President Putin. It said, well, you know, hey, you know, international law is working. But when, you know, when you've got now in the case of Gaza, now, of course, already the Americans and the Germans have condemned South Africa's suit. And of course, they would be outraged if...
Yeah, but George, would you say that they condemned it on its merits or because of politics?
Of course, it's not on its merits.
Of course, it's politics. Right. So they're undermining the institution that they actually created. That's my point. Martin, we're rapidly running out of time. Go ahead.
Yeah, and you know, I think the what we're going to learn, what we're going to see, though, I think with this case, even if it doesn't reach a final point, a final conclusion, is that for the first time, I think we're going to see a new generation, a new wave of countries around the world who will make a stand against Israel. So Israel, one way or the other, at the end of all this, is going to face a new opposition around the world, and a new boycott or sanctions, or whatever you want to call them, on a personal level, on a corporate level, and on a country-by-country level. So I think that's an important point to take away. We didn't mention Ukraine at all in this show, but it's interesting, the developments which are going on at the same time in Ukraine. You know, same problems, same dire lack of governance and sort of tailspin policies, and the rules-based order. This lovely expression, you know, is always applied with extreme hypocrisy.
Martin and George, I think that this is a pretty good hope. I think I can go to the bank with it that we won't be hearing that term for very much. Thank goodness. All right, gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and in Marrakesh. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RTC. And next time, remember, Crosstalk Rules.